time for Licking on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Licking on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Licking on Lending, David Licking.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. It's Monday, January 20th, 2020. How about that? 2020, Martin Luther King Day. What a special day this is, and I want to honor this amazing leader in our nation. He's, of course, most known for his contributions to American civil rights movement in the 60s. And, of course, I don't think any of us will ever forget, hopefully not, his most famous speech, I Have a Dream, which I believe was in 1963. And I look at what he captured in that. And I study speech, study communications. It's one of my favorite things. And I study leadership. And what he did, there's so much embodied in that speech. And I like what Simon Sinek said, one of his TED Talks. He didn't say, I have a plan. He talked about, I have a dream. And I think it's great to have plans, purposes, and intent, and all that. But it's more importantly to have a dream. And what a dream he had. And how it impacted our nation. I'm so grateful to him. I admire him so much, what he did to stomp out segregation and racism in our nation. Most personally admire him for how he did it. He was an advocate for nonviolent methods of protesting. There's so much we can protest. It seems like we've lost that nonviolent approach. It was so effective. And I admire him for so many things. And I look at a non-stirred-up call message to affect change. But thank you, Martin Luther King, for your contribution. He's one of my heroes and iconic leaders that I point to when I'm coaching and consulting on leadership, which is interesting. Doing a lot more of that these days. Anyway, this podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And we're so grateful to have you as our listener. Our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format. Love Rob Crispin for his written format, but we do it in an audio format. That's for all us dyslexics out there, as well as those that we can get it when you're driving and anywhere, any time. So we appreciate you telling others about this and being so many people right, D.C. What an impact this has had on them and being able to stay up on what's going on in the industry. Today, we're going to follow up. It's kind of 2 weeks of MBA specials. We're going to be following up last week's interview with Mike Fratantoni. If you didn't hear that, got a lot of feedback on his presentation. All good, very good. And they're all real. There's a couple points that people wrote me about that they want to hear Marina specialize on today, focus on. It has to do with economics, what's going on with trends with independent mortgage bankers. Of course, we have the IMB conference coming up. And it'll be full swing 2 weeks from today. I guess you can almost say it's a week out, this week and next week, and then we all fly into New Orleans. We'll be there for that. Marina and Mike Fratantoni are going to be doing a presentation. So we're going to have Marina Walsh on here, Vice President of Industry Analysis and Research and Economics. Love her content, what she has. We're going to be talking a little bit about the IMB, probably half the program about IMB, and then we're going to talk about the upcoming servicing conference that's going to be coming up, and we're going to talk about what are some of the trends, what we can do. We're going to have Marina back on later on as we get closer to the servicing conference. But really interesting hearing her comments about servicers, performance indicators, some of the unique challenges that IMBs have in this, especially when it comes to capital and liquidity. A lot more. So stay tuned to the Hot Topics segment. We are proud to be a part of the industry syndicate. A lot of podcasters all got together, took our example, launched it. We started this over 10 years ago. And so grateful for our regulars here helping us make this possible. But we've joined up with the industry syndicate and promote us, we promote them. Encourage you to check out industrysyndicate.com. I want to say a thank you to our sponsors. Of course, at the top of the list is the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. So grateful for them, as well as Black Knight, who has developed an actionable intelligence platform to deliver data that drives growth and reduces costs. Be sure to go to blackknightinc.com. Also, Open Mortgage, a leading provider of reverse mortgages, the home of some top LOs, as well as Celebrity Mortgage. Appreciate both these mortgage companies being a sponsor of the podcast and getting out. Check out our website, Licking on Lending Podcast, to learn more about both these companies and their advantages in the marketplace and what they can do to help you be successful. Also, Finastra, whose Fusion Mortgage Bot solution automatically addresses compliance issues, delivering enhanced borrower satisfaction and increased productivity. Man, we got a lot of productivity going on, but how are you handling it? How are your systems handling it? Also, I want to say thank you for the sponsorship of Lenders One. They've got their upcoming winter conference here in Miami. I'll be speaking at that, and I will be doing my podcast from there, as well as the Mortgage Collaborative. Both these co-ops create competitive advantages for both lenders and vendor members. Also, thank you to the Community Mortgage Lenders of America. Please be a part of that, as well as Ainsworth Advisors as a sponsor, as Knowledge Coop, Mobility RE, Velma, which is a virtual electronic marketing assistant, Vidyard, which is the ability for you to communicate video, your message about what's going on internally and externally using the Vidyard platform, as well as VendorSurf. Looking for our new vendor? Check out VendorSurf.com. Love this thing. As well as AI Assist. By the way, we've got VendorSurf coming up to be as a gift in an upcoming podcast next week. AI Assist is a great way for you to start getting into marketing using artificial intelligence. And special thank you goes out, as I do each week, to Alice, Andy, Alan, Joe. Thank you so much. Let's get over to Rob Van Rapp for us and get to this week's MBA Mortgage Minute. Rob?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Rapport. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last Tuesday, a House subcommittee held a hearing on the OCC's and FDIC's plan to change the regulatory framework of the Community Reinvestment Act. There is another hearing near the end of the month with Comptroller Joseph Otting before the full House Committee on Financial Services. And on Wednesday, the FHFA announced Chris Giancarlo as the chairman of Common Securitization Solutions. CSS operates the Common Securitization Platform. Giancarlo is the former chairman of the CFTC. And on Thursday, the FHFA published a request for input on ways to better protect the GSEs and FHLB from the risks associated with PACE loans. MBA has consistently opposed the super lien priority of PACE loans and raised concerns about the lack of consumer protections and disclosures afforded to homeowners. That's it for this week. Now you're up to speed with what's happening in Washington.
Yeah, I think what's significant on that is when anytime FHA, Mark Calabria and company, decide to go out and ask for solicit your feedback, we need to have our voices heard. That's why you need to become a part of Mortgage Action Alliance. Very good reasons to help your voice be heard. What makes it so effective is the way they designed this app. Download the Mortgage Action Alliance app. You can comment, sign on bills that are pending. You could just click a few buttons and off goes a notification to your representatives that are voting on important issues. So be sure to check it out. Appreciate them, all that the MBA does for us. And of course, we've got Marina Walsh later on in the podcast. Let's go over to Les Parker's segment on the TM Spotlight and this week's macro view of the markets. Les?
All bonds ever wanted, all bonds ever needed is here in Fed's arms. Moves are very unnecessary. They can only do harm.
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by Ainsworth Advisors.
Declining volatility reflects rising global debt and silent support from the Fed. Without the words quantitative easing, it provides cash to major international banks in exchange for treasury security. The banks use the cash to lend short-term to smaller international banks who lend short-term to emerging market businesses backed by long-term assets. Yikes! Someday the music will end. Stop can only do harm. These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Enjoy the silence.
Ah, good job, Les. Les and Gary Kentrebone team up on that. Good job. Love that. There's a lot there. Check out all the comments that Les produces daily. tmspotlight.com. You can also subscribe for free. I've been doing that for 30-plus years. Appreciate him. I appreciate him as a partner in the business. So much we do together. So check him out. Les Parker, tmspotlight.com. Joe Farr, good to have you here, my friend.
Hello, Dave.
What do we got going on? I'm getting closed. Markets closed today, so not a lot today,
yeah,
but what's the rest of the week look like?
Well, let's look at last week first. You know, despite some very significant economic information and despite the signing of the phase one trade deal with China, and despite the Dow rising 500 points to all-time highs, there was almost no volatility in the MBS market. It was surprising to see. MBS pricing for the week were, I think they ended the week down 6 basis points. So it's, you know, just a very, very quiet week. Now, looking at the economic data, you know, it showed just everything that, you know, it couldn't have been much better, to be quite honest. Core inflation is tame, both at the consumer and the producer level. Retail sales in December were much better than expected, especially when you look at it excluding automobile sales. And then December housing starts were through the roof, up 17% from November,
the
best level since 2006. And so, you know, when you combine all this together, you got low inflation, which means low rates. You got full employment. You got growing inventory now, and that bodes well for the housing industry. So it was just it was a good week all the way around. Now, looking at this week, there's really not much on the calendar. Existing home sales comes out on Wednesday. There is an ECB or European Central Bank meeting on Thursday, but no major changes are expected there. There's also a Bank of Japan meeting. I was trying to think when the last time that even, you know, crossed the radar. That won't be a big issue. And of course, who knows what's going to come out of the impeachment trial? Well, we kind of all expect we know what's going to come out. And assuming there's not a major surprise, that's not going to be a market moving event over the next couple of weeks. So that's it. Short and sweet.
Short and sweet. Good job. Appreciate you so much being here for over 10 years. You commit to something, you commit. I love it. Thank you so much. Thanks.
You bet. Thank
you. Happy MLK Day. I don't want to say MLK. I want to honor that guy with his whole name, Martin Luther King. Thank you. Thanks, Joe. Good job. Appreciate it. Let's get over to Scott Gordon at Open Mortgage with the Science of Sales.
It's been ingrained in us since we were kids that every time someone says, thank you, you're supposed to say, you're welcome. It's expected. But what if I told you that your expected behavior is not building a bridge? One of the fundamental aspects of meaningful relationships is the understanding that you and your partner are in it together. So you help each other out with no need to expect gratitude for favors or services, because you expect them to do the same for you someday. Instead of saying, you're welcome, simply say, hey, I know you do the same for me. This changes the dynamic of your relationship. It builds upon the science of reciprocity and implies that you now have the relationship where favors are freely exchanged. This is a minor change in your day-to-day communication, but the results could be huge. If it sounds too good to be true, it's not. It's just the science of sales.
Ah, the principle of reciprocity. I love that. Good job, Scott. Appreciate it. Alice Alvey, good to have you here with us. Alice is CMB and Vice President of Education and Training at Union Home Mortgage, and she is here with this week's legislative update. And I can't wait for you to talk about what you guys at Union Home are sponsoring now. It's so cool. Go ahead.
We are very excited to be a key sponsor at the Professional Bull Riders, the PBR events, and we are just so excited for this partnership. It really is a great venue. It's a great family event. So, you know, those of you who are not familiar with bull riding, go check it out. You can do pbr.com, and there's all kinds of great stuff. And you know this, being in Texas now, Dave, rodeos are a blast. And, you know, I was a vegetarian for 11 years, so I don't worry about the animals and all that. We did all the research, everything. All the animals are treated well. You know, they're like rock stars. And so anyway, we're very excited and looking forward to hosting lots of events related to it.
And that's so fun. I got to give a shout out to Bryce Foster, who's one of our regular listeners. He is Vice President of the Mortgage Division at First United Bank in Lubbock, and that's what his kids do is rodeo. You see any of his Facebook posts, it's bull riding, roping, everything else in the world. It's so much fun. So Bryce, you'll get some extra attention from Bryce on that one. Anyway, so what's he got for us this week on the legislative update?
Well, first of all, I'll give you a little history that goes with today. Since it is Martin Luther King Day, I thought it would be appropriate for everyone to know what happened with that, right? So we have that July 2nd of 1964 is actually when the Civil Rights Act of 64 was signed. Now, this was significantly different than the first Civil Rights Act in 1957. The first one that was passed was actually intentionally removed to ensure that the Justice Department would be able to enforce the Brown versus the Board of Education decision. So that meant that there wasn't a lot of teeth in the Civil Rights Act for segregation at schools and in other public forums. So that was one of the key things that needed to get put into law and was done in 64.
That's good.
Yeah, so Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech was August 28th. Now, Kennedy had been assassinated just before that. Kennedy was a big advocate for this Civil Rights Act, for this change. And, of course, it started with Eisenhower to make this change, then Kennedy, and then since with Kennedy's assassination, it was actually President Johnson who actually signed it. So Martin Luther King was a big driver, as well as many other civil rights leaders, to ensure that key component was added. So a little history lesson for everybody today on that really still doesn't feel like that long ago, and we still have a lot of work to do. So
we do.
In any case, yeah, it's always good to pay attention. So a couple of other bills that actually did get signed. So H.R. 3621, the Student Borrower Credit Improvement Act. This one is really interesting. It was introduced over the summer, but the House Majority Leader, who is, by the way, who those who don't know, is Steny Hoyer out of Maryland, he has indicated that this bill may be considered this week. And what this would do is take student loans off of credit reports when they're delinquent and defaulted. So you can imagine how that impacts how we qualify borrowers today. When they are in default, then, you know, I think it's a leg up, and it'll be interesting to see where this goes. So we'll see if it gets passed. Its odds of passing seem okay right now. Another House bill passed on the 13th. It'll require prudential regulators to report semi-annually. Now, they're already called up to Congress to report regularly, but this is trying to set a framework for when they would have to report and what they would have to report. So this is the FDIC, the Fed, the Board of Governors, Federal Reserve, and then the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency. So those three regulators, not doesn't include the CFPB. And then my favorite bill that got passed, also on the 13th, so they were doing a little bit of work last week, was Senate Bill 457 to create a President George H.W. Bush and First Lady Barbara Bush commemorative $1 coin. So I'm watching that one closely because I think that would be cool. So we'll hopefully see that one pass the Senate. So back to you, Dave.
We got bull riding and coin minting going into your segment today. So good job. Appreciate it so much. Alice, thank you
thank
so
you.
Much. And again, thank you
You're
for being
welcome.
Here for over 10 years. Appreciate it. Alan Pollock is here with this week's weekly tech update. Alan, good to have you here, friend.
It is great to be here. By the way, for anyone that's friends with David on Facebook, he posted pictures of his daughter's wedding and David's mouth. She looked absolutely beautiful.
Oh,
and you looked like
you
had a great time. I didn't see any crying.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did achieve my goal of losing, you know, 30 pounds before the wedding. Anyway, but it's a great wedding. The focus is on her after all, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It really was.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I always bring up a quick fix, a fast fact. This one's really simple and easy. MLK spoke 30 times, David. He was arrested 29. So interesting fact that most people probably don't realize.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So let's get to the good stuff. Blend.
Yes.
Everybody knows who Blend is. So they have released what they're calling their Mortgage Loan Officer app. It is a complete online app. You can take an app as well over the phone, online, in person. You can use their new technology to do that. And LOs have access to track the application and other services. So why is this such a big deal? Because we keep focusing on the borrower. We keep focusing on integrations between systems, but we need to make our staff as smart as our borrowers.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to probably see more folks come out with enabling the back end, the loan officers, different parts of the process. Blend has definitely made an important move there. You want to go online and check it out. Another really interesting topic, you know, we talk about adoption of technology. We always forget, or it's the last thing we work on, ADA compliance. You know, I can't say if it's a regulation or not, but I did notice this. I was doing some research. This is from November, December timeframe. Roostify announced that they were doing some work with a company called Level Access, who is a well-known leader in making sure that the tools online have full access for people with disabilities. You want to check it out. You know, if you think about it, technology has come such a long way for folks that need ADA compliance that there's no reason why they're not be able to buy a home and do other things as well. So we want to check that out. Roostify is doing really well there. Remember, the technology we use has all kinds of applications and settings and configurations for ADA and other types of special needs features. You know, David, another topic I wanted to bring up today, this one is really important, financial literacy. You know, the topic's brought up a few times. I don't have any vendor or anyone that's specific in the news, but I want to make sure that we don't forget that the adoption of technology really depends on training and teaching the folks that we interact with all the time about financial literacy. The new generations that are continuing to come up see things differently than we used to see them. And a mortgage is very different. Real estate is very different for them. They're much more careful. We've heard all the things about millennials and even, you know, super millennials. But the point that I'm trying to make is we need to work on financial literacy. That will help with the adoption of technology. It will help, actually, we can build technology to help with financial literacy, and it will make our systems much better for those folks. I don't know if you've heard much about it, but financial literacy is definitely it's a global issue. It's a big deal that a lot of people are focusing on.
It is.
Yeah, and the very last thing that I wanted to mention, just a quick little snippet. If you are still working on your 2020 technology tech checkup, getting engaged in your projects and you're looking to meet all your technology goals, something really, really important is that as you look at this year, you need to focus on just a few things that are important. Don't try and overtake too many technology projects. You're better off becoming the master of few. I know it's the master of none, but become the master of a few small items. Be really good. Understand your success metrics and really work on your team and the success of your team and even your external teams to meet those goals. If you do so, your technology will be much more prone to working the first time, and you'll be able to manage the smaller scale and transformation that you're looking for.
Yep, so good. Excellent. I mean, that's so true. And what we're seeing is there's a lot of changing going on as it relates to technology because there's so much development. Appreciate that. Helen, appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Hopefully you stick around for the whole Hot Topic segment. Good to have you.
I will be.
Appreciate your contribution. Folks, go check out Finastra.com. They've got some great tools and technology.
There was a study done just a couple of years ago by Carlisle and Gallagher that said 79% of bank customers go somewhere else for their mortgage. And it revolved around having the technology.
It doesn't have to be this elegant, crowded screen. Sometimes the quicker the buttons you can just click on there to get to it.
But I think the key thing that we're finding is it's that overall experience. And you look at the millennials and they're a very educated group of people. We also look at the millennials, we all think of them as these young kids running around with iPads. They're not. They're 28 to 42 year olds now. These are people working in your branches.
And once you have it on mobile, Eric, you know how you can track that.
Absolutely, we look at it every day. We went ahead and implemented the Mortgage Bot mobile at Bank Midwest, started from nothing, and right now we're taking about 40% of our mortgage apps via the mobile.
And you know, when you look at Mortgage Bot, just talk about experience. So this has been around for about 20 years. We've got close to 1,500 customers using it. And I know there's some other vendors out there, but they've got about 50, maybe 100 customers. The technology here is phenomenal.
A lot of technology going on. They've got a big release coming up of a new product. I want you to check it out. It'll be coming up here shortly. Let's get over to Andy Schell, the Prophet Doctor, Mr. Prophet Doctor himself, with a real PhD now, adding into the
I guess that would actually be Dr. the Prophet Doctor himself. Thanks, Dave.
Dr. the Prophet. Yeah, it's a little redundancy there. Yeah, Dr. the Prophet Doctor. Yeah, so how do we say that now? We have to change that up. Yeah.
So here's the deal. I've been working with companies around the country, and I'm watching year-end activity, and I'm watching people look at their numbers and grouse about the good, the bad, and the ugly. And one of the things that's coming up is this one element of concessions. And so I'm going to talk about connections, connecting things together, connections and whoops. So the uh-oh, what happened?
Like you used to say, you see oftentimes in your MBA webinars, is what goes boom in the night? So
exactly right, Dave. And so to that end, the broader topic is when financial consequence may also have a regulatory consequence. So we're looking at a financial thing, but there actually might be a regulatory be aware of thing we need to be worried about. So when we talk about money, when we talk about finance, when we talk about predicting the future, which is part of what finance does, we're going to be budgeting our revenue for 2020. We're going to look at what are we going to make? Because gain on sale is the biggest revenue item of an independent mortgage company. So we want to budget what we expect to generate by establishing our secondary margin by product, and then that drives our gain on sale. And so, but what happens when the gain on sale is reduced and we don't make what we thought we were going to make. Well, that's going to be lower returns. It's going to be lower cash flow. It could even result in losing money, at least at the branch level, and possibly at the company, but hopefully not. So why is the gain on sale reduced? What causes the gain on sale to go down? Well, one of the really common ones that people see, but it's not necessarily a big number, but it can be, and that's extension costs, where we take too long to deliver a file, and then we have a cost because of that. And when you're in a hedging environment, it's not as obvious. In a best efforts environment, it's very obvious. But the other thing, and the big number that I'm hearing people talk about, is branch concessions. They're doing the 2019 year-end results, and they're looking at how much money they lost, had a reduced gain on sale because of branch concessions. So let's jump in that for just a second. So first off, well, just so we are all on the same page, what is a branch or an LO concession? And in its simplest terms, concessions occur when the stated rate that we establish on our rate sheet based on the product margin markups that we expect to generate in order to generate the gain on sale so that we make the cash flow to pay for our expenses so we make the money we thought we were going to make. The concession occurs when we lower the rate in favor of the borrower, which means that we don't make as much money. Now, the originator will argue that, well, making some money is better than no money, so if you don't give me the lower rate so I can give it to this customer, we're going to lose the transaction. We're going to lose the deal. You got to give me a better rate or you're going to lose the deal. That's the common phrase. So, but when that happens, when we have a concession that we grant, that means lower revenue for us. So you can look at it like it's an expense. So when you give a concession, it's like an expense. It's reducing the gain on sale. And that can affect cash flow, can affect a bunch of other things. But the thing we got to remember is that you can't pass a concession on to an originator. There's LO compensation rules that say you can't do that. So whenever you give a concession, it's a flat out reduces the company's income but doesn't affect the originator's compensation. You still have to pay the same compensation rate even if you give concessions to borrowers to save the deal. So, but here's the tricky part. Here's the connection. When we offer a lower rate because the originator said, well, you got to do this somewhere, you got to save the deal. Save the deal. What seems to occur is there's a clustering effect. So the originators that ask for concessions tend to be the same originator over and over and over. It also tends to be a higher volume originator that's asking for concessions over and over and over. And so when the higher volume originator is asking for the concessions to give the customer the benefit, what also we've noted is that sometimes these high-volume originators specialize. They have certain niches that they support, like they may support an Asian group primarily. And so when you have an originator who supports a protected class, I can already hear Alice going, oh, no. When you have an originator who's supporting a protected class, and that protected class always receives or frequently receives a pricing concession, that is now creating a favored disparate treatment and disparate impact, which could be a fair lending violation. So
that's where I was going. Yeah, exactly right, Dave.
I know you know this stuff too, I know. I was just thinking about Alice. She's always talking about fair lending and disparate impact, disparate treatment.
Alice knows it.
So this concession, though, a financial effect that we want to monitor in accounting might actually be a regulatory risk that we need to be mindful of, because while the concession helps the customer that for the particular originator and doesn't hurt the originator at all, so why wouldn't they ask for it? But it could create fair lending risk that we need to be aware of, because causing one group of borrowers to pay more, so all the other borrowers pay more and this one originator's borrowers pay less, if they're protected class, that's a fair lending violation. So, you know, this all I'm pointing out is, hey, think about this. So if you really want to take the deep dive, get a hold of Mitch Keiter, Werner Brodsky, or Troy Garris at Garris Horn, talk to these guys. They're experts in the field, and I know that they know it, so that's why I'm saying this. I'm sure there's others. But, man, concessions hurts gain on sale, and it might even be stepping in a regulatory bear trap. So just be careful. And there you go, Dave. That's the problem for today.
There for a minute, I thought you just wandered right over into Alice's topic there for a while. But it's so important, because the financial consequences. What's so interesting about that, Andy, is we have one client that is starting an audit today. And CFPB is in there for a reason, and somehow there were exceptions made. Now, there's been a complete change of management in there, but the former regime made a number of exceptions that could have some financial consequences on a company that's near and dear to my heart. And so, this is an important topic. We start looking at exceptions. And I love this one. Andy, you and I both have, we've been consulting together and working together for so many years. How many times have you've heard me talk about when I get introduced, I go around to a lot of these meeting clients in the field, and they go, let me introduce you to our number one top loan officer. And you know what I do every time I hear that? Put a bullseye in the back of him, because that guy or gal is rarely the most profitable. In fact, in some cases, they've actually been costing the company money. And because they're a top producer, they're deemed and awarded and lifted up on the shoulders of the company as the best, our top loan officer. Better look into it. Get a guy like Andy Schell in to look at your profitability, look at it really and accurately. And, of course, listen to Alice's segment all the time because she covers all this. But good job, Andy.
Thanks, Dave.
Got me all fired up. Well, good job.
Yeah,
love it.
Thanks.
Folks, that wraps up the first part of the podcast. But now, for those of you listening on a downloaded basis, we'll end here. And you just want to stay right on, click on to the next podcast. We're going to get into the Hot Topic segment. For those of you that are listening live, you don't go anywhere because we're going to get right into it right now. Folks, today on the Hot Topic segment of the Lickin' on Lending podcast, we're honored to have Marina Walsh, Vice President of Industry Analysis, Research, and Economics. That's a lot. In other words, in all that, she's really smart, very good observer of what's going on. She's with the Mortgage Bankers Association. And Marina, it is such an honor to have you here. So excited.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, so timely, especially following up with the Mike Awesome Pratt and Tony on your talking about economics. And I love Mike. He's just such a perfect contrast to my personality, because I'm always up there and out there a little bit, and he is just so calm. Yeah, interest rates. He could be saying interest rates be climbing to 13%, and you know, he would just say it, the same content, if interest rates are dropping down to zero. I mean, he's just the same, most consistent the way he lays it out. I love it. But we talked last week, and I kind of want to have this start out as a continuance of our talk with Mike. But before we even go there, for those who, I can't imagine, people don't know who you are because you're so instrumental there in what you do at the MBA, I want our audience to get to know you a bit. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what's your career path?
Sure. Thanks for having me. And I'm Vice President of Industry Analysis at MBA. I'm actually an MBA veteran on my 19th year, almost 20th year with Mortgage Bankers Association, always in research and economics, always looking at tracking profitability. A lot of the stuff that Andy tracks, I track as well. But my role has definitely changed over the years. When I had little ones, I was working part-time for MBA, but now I'm full-time. When I started at MBA, my little girl was 3 months old, and now she is a sophomore in college. So lots happened during this time. But going back to my career path, I was actually with Ernst & Young in their Federal Credit Advisory Services group, and we had some contracts with Ginnie Mae, worked very closely with HUD. And that's how I sort of got my foot into mortgage banking, was when I was with Ernst & Young in the 1990s. And from there, one of the managers I work with moved over to Mortgage Bankers Association, and soon thereafter, I followed her. So that's my story. During these, 19 years, I've worked for three chief economists, and Doug Duncan, who many people are familiar with. Yep. Doug. Yeah, Doug. And then Jay Brinkman, who's down in Texas in your neck of the woods. Yeah. And Mike Fratton.
He's a part of our Ains. Jay is part of our Ainsworth Advisory Company. So we're
That's
thrilled to have
right.
him there working with.
Been Doug. Very fortunate to have some great, working for some great leaders in the industry.
And Mike is so good. I just love Mike. But the sense of humor, I mean, I get copied on some of the emails before between Doug and Jay, and their dry sense of humor is so funny. Jay had me in stitches the other day when we were talking about something. I'm only going to try to mix it in, but it was so hilarious. Classic Brinkman. But anyway, love what Mike's done in following up on the big shoes he's had to fill. And I'm so glad that the MBA has you there, Marina, because you do such a good job. And you really help us see the industry. We get excited more up and down about the industry, but you bring us exactly what's going on because of your research and the analysis that goes into it. So let's start there, especially knowing mm-hmm. that you and Mike are going to be presenting here in just it feels like a week out. It's actually 2 weeks from today, I think you're actually presenting in New Orleans at the IMB conference. If you're not registered, folks, get out and get registered for this. If for no reason, just because of this one part of the presentation, there's many good things. We're doing a panel on Wednesday. I'll be on a panel on Wednesday. We're doing a breakout. Give it a shout out. Myself, along with Eddie Perez and Allison Johnston and Brenda Clem and myself, we're doing a presentation on sustaining growth through market cycles. So anyway, a lot of good content, but let's talk about what you and Mike are talking about. And he alluded to this in his interview last week. What about the cost to originate? Which direction is it going?
Well, I tell you, it's so nice to be presenting now as opposed to a year ago, because we have some positive news to give everybody in the industry. You know, 2019 started out abysmally for those that were around mm-hmm. in the first quarter of 2019. That was one of the worst years for us. Profitability-wise, we were at a losses, I think, when we surveyed 350 mortgage lenders, losses of 11 basis points. And these are all independent mortgage banks that have to be making money. And now we're at 74 basis points based on third quarter. We don't have fourth quarter data yet.
Profitability.
So, yeah. So, awesome. So that's profitability. Now, you asked specifically about costs. Cost is a big driver of that. You know, the question is how much is related to revenues and how much is related to cost. Most of that improvement is related to the cost to originate, of course, driven mm-hmm. by fixed costs divided by more loans. But what I think is very significant is the degree of the loss. We've never seen such a big quarterly or the degree of the change. If you look at the first quarter, we were averaging for the nation $9,300 per loan in origination.
Got it
cost.
That high.
Yeah, $9,300, and now we're at $7,200. So big drop off, particularly between the first and second quarters of 2019. So my thinking is, of course, volume always plays a role in the cost to originate.
Right.
My question is, are all these technology investments coming to play? You know, it's hard to see the ROI in technology investment when you're in a depressed market, when there's no volume coming in. But it does say something. It's actually encouraging that in just one quarter, we saw a $1,500 per loan drop. And then the next quarter, from the second quarter to third quarter, we saw another $500 per loan drop. So that's encouraging, especially at a time when loan balances keep going up. So, you know, we're paying our loan officers in basis points, so a big chunk of that goes to sales, but there's some efficiencies being garnered, which is encouraging.
That is really encouraging and significant. The old saying, rising tide floats a lot of boats, and no question we've had that, but really interested in getting your perspective on your thoughts, because you do a lot of look a lot at technology. Alan talked a little about Blend now releasing a new app that further helps hopefully bring about some efficiencies. We have Finastra out there doing, was one of our sponsors, mm-hmm. does a lot. What are you hearing is a contributing factor on this?
Yeah, well, in some of our other data from other sources, we go more into depth into tech costs. And among depositories, mm-hmm. the average is up around $1,000 a loan. For independent mortgage companies, it's around $400 per loan. Doesn't necessarily mean that depositories are investing in technology and they're going to be more cutting edge than IMBs. It's also a function of the fact that a lot of these depositories have legacy systems. They have systems that need to talk to their core retail banking system. So it could be more complicated. But whether you look at depositories or IMBs, the cost to originate for technology is rising. And so the goal would be to see improvement in terms of productivity, in terms of retail loans closed per loan officer, loans closed per non-producing FTE, which would include your fulfillment functions and your non-producing sales staff, apps per underwriter, we'd expect to see improvement. That has not come through in the data, but I can't wait to get a hold of the full 2019 data this spring. And by the way, for all of you out there, if you aren't participating in our benchmarking studies, this is the time, because we'll have... I'm data rich in May and June from all of our studies that take place during the spring, and so I'll feel a lot better presenting in May and June. But in general, you know, a good portion with independent mortgage companies, about 58% of those costs are going to sales. You asked specifically about technology. Technology counts for about 5% of the total cost to originate. And then fulfillment's about 23%, and the rest is corporate and production support functions.
Okay, I'm going to get around to our regulars. We'll start with Allison. We're on the topic of technology. Then I get to Alice and Andy. Andy, we're not leaving you at the last. It's just because I know you've got so many questions you're going to ask our guest here just a bit. Oh, Andy, and a doctor now. So anyway, let's start with you, Alan. Technology, any questions you have for Marina?
Yeah, number one, I'm glad to hear that you're data rich. I think that is super exciting. I think a lot of folks are actually looking at the back end process, right? When you talk about technologies only accounted for about 5% or whatever that number was, it's probably more, or it hasn't been reported well enough. I think lenders are still learning how technology impacts their organization.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I think it's safe to say we as an industry are really focused on how to move technology and the workflow process much faster, right? For example, when you're looking at an underwriter, how many loans can an underwriter look at per day compared to when it was all manual? How do we automate the things an underwriter has to look at? And how do we help identify risks up front? When you start looking at all those things, and we've been talking about it for so long, when we actually start doing it and we can measure it, I think your numbers will shift a little bit. So I think that's positive, but I was just curious if those are some of the things that you've been looking at.
Absolutely. In fact, I talked about productivity, but another metric that we look at in terms of efficiency is number of days from application to closing. And for that metric, we have seen improvement from 2016 to 2019. For refis, the average has gone from over 53 days down to 45 days. For purchases, it's gone from 49 days down to 44 days. So in terms of days from app to close, we are seeing that improvement. You know, I don't know to what extent we can link it all to technology, but that's certainly a factor.
It's really good. That's interesting. Great statistics. Folks, you can download this and go get those, so just keep right on listening. But fascinating information. Alice, interesting. Andy was stepping over into your territory. What thoughts do you have as we talk to her about some of this?
So, Marina, I find it interesting about, you know, that big change in 2019, and maybe you addressed it and I didn't quite pick up on it, but how much of that is really just equated because it was refinances? And so the volume just came to people, right? You didn't have to necessarily go out and get it and drive more business. You just got the benefit of the bump in the market.
Yeah.
So as we look ahead to 2020, you know, people are going to have to work hard now to get that business to come in the door. And, you know, kind of a second part of, do you expect that this is going to change in 2020 because we, you know, as of now, can't foresee a bump?
Yeah, so in terms of your first point, yes. I mean, every time we see any type of significant decline in cost to originate, it's driven by volume. But I guess my point is, since we've been doing this study in 2008 to the present, we haven't seen that much of a drop in origination costs in one quarter, even though we've had spikes along the way. We definitely had spikes in 2012, the second half of 2016, the second half of 2015. And so that's, I guess, what I'm focused on is, you're right, volume trumps everything, but are there other factors at play? Now, looking forward to 2020 and what we're seeing, I think the first half of the year, and Michael probably alluded to this last week, but the first half, there was enough capacity constraints in the second half of 2019 that I think a lot of volume is bleeding into 2020. I don't know, for those of you who follow our weekly application survey, we had pretty strong results last week, particularly among purchase. So purchase in every quarter is going to be better than what it was in 2019. If you look at our forecast for Q1, 2, 3, 4, and 2020, it's better than 2019. The difference is refinances are going to be higher on a quarter-over-quarter basis for the first and second quarters of 2020, but then they're really going to start dropping off because interest rates have kind of leveled off and the forecast is for pretty flat interest rates. So we would assume that, you know, by the second half of the year, a lot of the folks who are going to refinance have refinanced. So it gets tougher in the third and fourth quarters with our overall quarterly volume lagging in 2020 what we saw in 2019 because of the drop in refis.
Yeah.
So it really is, again, the focus. We keep talking about going back to basics and going back to the purchase market. That's what we're gonna have to see. Of inventories, yeah. What we talked about, new home sales. So hopefully the supply issue won't be, you know, hurting things too much in terms of purchase origination. So we still have purchase originations going up over the next 3 years, actually.
Good stuff. Really interesting. Alice, anything more?
No, that was great. I think it helps just to frame it for everyone because that's what we're anticipating. When you look at the numbers that in that forecast, that's what everyone's kind of bracing for. So You anticipate your marketing costs will go up and some other costs will go up, which will change that bottom line.
And it could really potentially change again, talking about concessions. You know, you only need one lender out there, and so we could see some pressures on the revenue side of the equation, too, in the second half of the year.
One of the things that Mike alluded to when we talked to is the competitive nature. As the market gets more competitive, because volumes could, in theory, ebb off a bit because of refinances not being as abundant, was it's going to become more competitive, and those that have lower costs, by whatever means, by efficiencies, technology, whatever, are going to have a decided advantage, and I think that's significant. Andy Schell, no one better to talk about efficiencies and or at least the cost side of it than you. I got to tell you, when I was talking to Marina at one of the recent conferences, when she started talking about data, it was like watching a kid get excited about Christmas. She was talking about the new data being released. She just got the biggest smile and just got so animated. It was so fun to watch her. Anyway, Andy, you know her well.
I do. Hi, Marina. Great to have you on Lickin' and Lending.
Thanks.
So I'm going to do my best to not do the total geek out because Marina and I totally could go there and we would be unintelligible. Because I really would like to talk about intangible revenue, but we're not even going to go there. So I think that I have two key questions, but I'm going to start with the kind of the bigger picture question. And that is, you know, when we start talking about expenses, we start talking about value drivers, we start talking about relationships among revenue and cost and value drivers like volume or staff counts. And you got, just on the show, you've already mentioned a number of really important elements.
Yeah.
How do you condense it and consolidate it and turn it into a cartoon presentation, more or less, so that anybody can understand? So, the top producing originator who now owns their own company, no experience in finance, no background in accounting. How do you take all this amazing nuggets of gold and show it to them in a way that they see what it is that you're saying?
Yeah. Well, pictures definitely help. It's easier to show pictures than a radio show because people understand bars going up over time. And so
yes.
If the cost of originating, you see those bars going up. That certainly helps. But what we try to do, for instance, is we try to show cost to originate versus volume. We have one chart for that. And showing volume and where the volume is heading or where the originations are heading versus the cost to originate or profitability. So lots of pie charts, you know, try to break it down into little pieces. And I've learned over time it's better not to make the charts too complicated with, you know, four different variables on the chart because then folks get a little confusing. But, you know, we're trying to lead the witness, too, with variables that make sense. For instance, loan balances that are going up. We're at a steady high in terms of average loan balance at about $276,000. So showing that over time versus cost to originate is important, too, because we focus so much on processing, underwriting, and closing, and sales is a big part of it. As long as loan officers are being paid in basis points based on the loan amount, that really makes a big difference in terms of where the overall cost to originate is. So we try to do that. And one thing we're trying to do, too, is more segmentation, looking at different groups, because an IMB is not the same as a mid-sized bank or a credit union or community bank or a large bank. You know, MBA represents so many different segments of the industry. So it's important to present data that's specific to the segment you're speaking on, which is why now we have credit union networking groups and IMB networking groups, to try to bring the relevant data home to them. Another big difference that I've noticed is in terms of just geographic location. You know, you compare the Midwest to California, and there's such a huge difference. So what does $7,200 cost to originate really mean when California is at $8,000 and then the Midwest is at $6,000? So we're trying to really break down the pieces a little more than we used to do to make it more relevant to those different groups.
Sounds awesome, and everybody listening, charts and graphs help. That's funny, Marina. We'll talk about this some other time. My second PhD is actually in communications using graphical imagery to convey financial content. So we'll talk about that more.
Ooh, hey, yeah. If you go to the next conference, you see Andy and Marina over there in the corner. They're just getting giddy on that. They're feeding off each other. So good. We've got to talk about the upcoming servicing conference, and there's so much coming out about
servicing. Absolutely.
I'm so excited. We get so caught up in all this stuff, and it's so good. We got a ton of questions. And listeners, I'm so sorry. Thank you for writing. I'm sorry we can't get to it all, but we've got to get to servicing, and we will have Marina back. Someone just said, please, with a lot of ease that I'd have her back soon. Great information, great content. A lot of people are responding. But let's talk about the servicing conference. It's coming up. What are the dates, and what are you focusing on?
February 23rd to 26th, we have a new name for our servicing conference. For so many years, decades, it's been called the National Servicing Conference. Kind of boring. So we are renaming it. It's the MBA's Servicing Solutions Conference and Expo 2020 in Orlando, February 23rd and 26th. That was a conscious decision to change the conference title to better match up with what we're trying to accomplish, which is more interactive sessions, more small groups, sort of ask the expert sessions, focused on very specific needs. Again, segmentation. We're going to have different experts, for instance, representing different parts of the country, California, New York, Florida, and so forth.
Wow.
So we think that that'll really help draw people to the conference. And technology is going to be a big topic of conversation. Goodness, with all the cybersecurity issues out there, wiring fraud, et cetera. So technology is going to be a big issue. Of course, regulatory is always a big issue. And market updates. So definitely want you all there. Yeah, I can give you a sneak preview if we have time, David.
Yes.
I can give you a sneak preview as to what we're going to be talking about. My colleague Joel Kahn and I will be doing a market update. And so we've talked a lot about originations, but what do things look like on the servicing side? Well, for those who follow our press releases, we have some really, really great data out there in terms of delinquencies. You know, we're at a near 25-year low in terms of the delinquency rate, which is great for the cost of service dropping off. So that's all good news. We continue to watch FHA delinquencies just because more recent cohorts have a bit of a higher or a lower, rather, credit score and some other risk factors. So we're paying attention to FHA. But again, whether you look at FHA, conventional VA, we're at pre-recession levels, which is great news. Now, the only thing that's not going so well on the servicing side is the fact that we have MSR impairments in 2019 related to the heavy prepayment activity starting in the second quarter and into the third quarter. So on a financial basis, we saw this big hit to net servicing financial income mm-hmm. for those especially that didn't hedge their servicing rights. But operationally, if you look at high loan balances, which help out your service fees, and the expenses dropping off as folks have gotten through the last, you know, over the last 5 years have managed to operationalize all the national servicing standards. So we see a drop in direct cost of service associated with just managing all the regulatory changes and also the low delinquency rate. So operationally, we're looking really good. But again, in terms of the valuation of the servicing rights changing, that, you know, was a big financial hit for services financial statements.
And one of the questions I have that just came in, I know Andy could talk to this, but I want your perspective on it, and that is, why did it come as such a surprise, and why were people not hedging their servicing? This is something that could have been managed. Any thoughts on that?
It's expensive. Hedging mm-hmm. servicing rights, you have to be of a certain level of sophistication, or you have to hire someone from outside your organization to hedge your servicing rights. And, you know, again, I don't want to get my boss in trouble, Mike Fratantoni, but when you think a year and a half ago, and what our forecast
right.
was in terms of interest rates,
I know.
it certainly, you know, the spring of 2019 was certainly not what folks thought a year before that, or even six
right.
to 9 months before that.
And Mike does such a good job of predicting interest rates. And, I mean, it's an impossible job. It's predicting weather most parts of the country is. So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, I appreciate the effort and all the work that they go to. They're very conscientious to do it. But, yeah, that was ouch for a lot of people who were looking at that. But there was times to make adjustments along the way. And I think there are some unique challenges for IMBs versus the regulated world. Are you going to be getting into some of that at the conference?
Absolutely. Those particular challenges, well, first of all, we all live in the regulated world. IMBs are regulated,
yeah, that's
for sure.
Yeah,
I got to set
right.
that straight.
Yeah,
we've got to do that. I'm representing
right.
MBA
yeah.
here. But definitely at both conferences, whether it's the IMB conference or the servicing conference, but particularly the IMB conference, we have a bunch of sessions dedicated to unique challenges associated with independent mortgage banks. So as we know on the origination side, independent mortgage banks now in terms of market share represent over 50% of purchases, but also over 50% of refinances. And so they've made a big push, particularly in the FHA space, in terms of gaining market share. And they've also taken over a bigger share of servicing altogether, particularly government
yep.
servicing. And so among some circles, and this is well documented, among some circles, there's, you know, a level of concern, well, will these independent mortgage banks have the liquidity and the capital to withstand a downturn,
right.
particularly if they're holding FHA mortgage servicing rights? And so there's going to be some discussions on that. We have folks from the counterparty risk groups at Fannie, Freddie, Ginnie coming speaking about that at the IMB conference.
Yeah.
And it's also, MBA is really focused on, well, what solutions are available? You know, the Federal Home Loan Bank financing, would that be available to
mm-hmm.
IMBs? Can we change the acknowledgement agreement to make warehouse lenders feel better about offering help, you know, financing for the servicing advances and potential Ginnie Mae early buyouts? Again, this is all kind of conjecture. It's in the, you know, stress testing phase. But we're not in a stress situation right now. Again,
right now.
The economics are looking very good. Unemployment rate is low. But it's something that's on the minds of those, particularly at Ginnie Mae. So we'll be spending a lot
yeah.
of time talking about that.
Yeah, Gregory Keith is going to be speaking there. Really interested in
mm-hmm.
hearing what Greg has to say again on this topic. Ginnie Mae is probably the most concerned about it. Well, they're all the GSEs are concerned about it, but a lot going on. Folks, we've run out of time, but Marina, thank you so much for coming in. You're on your day off on a holiday, MLK Day, Martin Luther King Day.
See, my parents came to D.C. in the 1960s, so we definitely want to honor Martin Luther King on this day. So thank you for having me, and thank you, Martin Luther King, too.
Yeah, so grateful for great leaders, amazing leaders, and one of those at the top of our list is especially the person we're honoring today. So happy Martin Luther King Day, and kudos to he and the leadership he brought. More than kudos. That just sounds so light for what he did and went through and the ultimate sacrifice he gave. So, Marina, thank you so much. I love your passion for research, Marina. And you're just, it's so much fun to find someone who just gets into it so much. And you do. And I'm just so grateful for you and everyone at the NBA for what they do to make us have a healthy, vibrant housing finance system here in America. So thank you to you, Marina, as well as to Marcia and Bob and the whole team for all that they do. Thank you so much. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors as we exit the program, Black Knight, Open Mortgage, Finastra, the MBA, Lenders One, Mortgage Collaborative, the CMLA, as well as Ainsworth Advisors, Knowledge Coop, Mobility RE, Celebrity Home Loans, as well as Velma, Midyard, VendorSurf, and AI Assist. Of course, always thank you to Alice, Andy, Joe, and Alan for their contributions. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.